Welcome all. This is the Energy and Utilities Finance and the Policy Committee meeting today at the Senate Office Building. It's a tad after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're going to hear today from the Commerce Department, and specifically about the Infrastructure and Jobs Act that was passed last year, and the resources that potentially it brings to Minnesota. But before we do that, let's just, everybody's busy with their computers and so on and so forth. I see that. Everybody's busy. Senator Chamberlain, just maybe introduce yourself for the committee, as long as we're starting out new year and so on and so forth.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Senator Roger Chamberlain, and I live in Lionel Lakes, represent District Senate District 38.
Senator Utke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Paul Utke, I represent District 2 up in northwestern Minnesota. All are parts of 8 counties at border Canada.
Senator Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Jason Rarick, I represent District 11. It's all of Pine and Carlton County, half of Kanabec County, and a little bit of St. Louis.
And Senator Matthews, you're virtual with us today. Want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm Senator Andrew Matthews, District 15. I live in Sherburne County. I have Sherburne, Mille Lacs, Benton, Kanabec, Wright, and Morrison, all are pieces of those counties in my district.
And Senator Newton, you're virtual with us today.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, I'm Senator Jerry Newton. I represent Coon Rapids, Blaine, Spring Lake Park area, the 3rd, the 5th, and the 6th congressional districts.
Great. And Senator Torres Ray.
Good afternoon. I am Patricia Torres Ray. I represent District 63, which includes South Minneapolis and part of Ridgeville.
Okay, and we have the Honorable Senator France from Mankato. Do you want to introduce yourself? He's present with us.
You know I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greetings, everybody. It's Senator Nick Ferentz from District 19, representing the beautiful communities of Mankato, North Mankato, St. Peter, all in Nicollet County, and part of Le Sueur and Blue Earth. I'm glad to join you and looking forward to the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ferentz. That's a lot of space. And so I'm State Senator Dave Sundrup from Rochester, representing Dodge and Olmsted counties. Again, a pleasure to be here today and to, again, begin the energy Utilities, Finance, and Policy Committee sessions for 2022. I just wondered, I provided on your desks, and I'm not sure if we're getting this out to the virtual attendees or not, but just a little summation of last year that we put together, and I thought perhaps I'd just bring it back for memories, if you will, in terms of what we did, and might guide to some extent going forward to what we might do going forward. But we had, in effect, $16 million in total going to solar on schools. We created an energy transition office. We have a career training pilot project in North Minneapolis. With Senator Chamberlain's bill, as I recall, an ammonia production research development facility out in Morris, and that's a lot about ammonia and hydrogen. That'll be big going forward. We had actually about a little over $3 million going to solar on schools relative to colleges and universities, $10 million to the solar rewards program, extending it, $5.5 million to the Mountain Iron Economic Development Authority for the expansion of a solar manufacturing plant in that city. $5.4 million going to St. Thomas University, the microgrid research project. We've got about $500,000 for a weather study by the University of Minnesota. $125,000 for a Buy Clean, Buy Fair Minnesota initiative. It's a study project, and we'll get data back on that. And then just going on in some policy, we created this thing called META, which is a Technology Accelerator, and that's created in policy. No money there. This Senator Matthews, a project to minimize the impacts on retirees in power generation facilities, Natural Gas Innovation Act, cold weather rule extension, that was, as I recall, Senator Rarick's. But anyway, just a summary of what we did last year, and we'll see what that list looks like at the end of this session. But people have at least spoken to me in terms of the fact that this was a pretty good energy year, and we just hope to make subsequent this year, maybe if it's that good, who knows, but certainly a good and productive year, and with your help, committee members, we'll do that. So why don't we move on into our witness, if we will, and I believe that's going to be virtual, right? Okay, so we're going to have a virtual witness with us, and we have from the Department of Commerce, Catherine Blyvelt, and Michelle Granzi, both, again, from the Department of Commerce. I'm not sure who wants to go first, but they're going to report to us again on the Federal Infrastructure and Jobs Act, a big initiative of the federal government, a lot of money, and a lot of money going to energy across our United States, and of course Minnesota included. So Michelle or Catherine, who wants to start?
Thank you, Chair. This is Catherine Blauveld, Assistant Commissioner, and Michelle and I will start our presentation. Just wanted to thank you, Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to share information today. I will brief introduction myself. As Assistant Commissioner, I work on budget and policy creation and proposals for the administration on energy, but also have responsibilities with our siting unit, our energy assistance, and telecommunications. And I'll pass it to my colleague, Michelle, to introduce herself.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Senjum, for having us today. I'm Michelle Granzi. I serve as the director of the Minnesota State Energy Office with oversight of the Weatherization Assistance Program, the State Energy Program, and a number of state and statutorily directed energy initiatives.
Welcome, Michelle, Ms. Granzi, and Ms. Blyvelt, is it back to you?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay, proceed as you're ready.
Thank you. So we have projecting a deck, and we can go to the next slide and start delving into the details of this considerable bill. So the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act was passed mid-November. And before we get into the different pots of money, just wanted to start with what is the opportunity, right, for Minnesota? What problems can we help try to solve and help Minnesotans with? So you see some of those potential benefits here on this slide. Of course, we're here to talk about the energy portions of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. But certainly, you know, if we're going a layer deeper there, we want to build hopefully greater resilience, right, into our grid, into our electric grid, greater resilience for our building stock, but also wanting to serve all Minnesotans, and appreciated the geography call outs that I heard as members introduced themselves, right? As we look at this funding, this unprecedented amount of funding that's available, can it be available for rural communities, for urban communities, right? Really all of Minnesota. So in this very early stage, we're just thinking always about how can we get the word out, right, to everyone, and how do we help prepare all kinds of entities, big and small, for this opportunity, and ultimately maximize the amount of federal dollars coming into the state. Next slide, please. Great. So this is, you know, an overview of those big categories of opportunity that present itself with the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. I should recognize that it is a historic amount of investment, and there's investment in roads and bridges and broadband and over to electric vehicles, right? Charging infrastructure, so other areas sort of outside of the confines of this presentation, but certainly significant for Minnesota. And then, you know, noting most of this funding that we'll be talking about is competitively set forth, right? So the opportunity there is if Minnesota is well poised and we have solid applications and the minimum requirements met, we could really bring in a significant amount of dollars into the state to get some of these exciting benefits. I should also note that tribes sometimes have their own funding streams, right, in this very large act, and sometimes they do not. So it will vary. And then overall, as we continue to talk about this, we don't have exact funding numbers yet from the federal government or for the Department of Energy, right? So we'll do our best to, you know, to provide information, but, you know, it's all preliminary at this point as we're really, you know, driven by what information we've been given. Next slide, please. So here's the other side of the coin, right? You talk about the opportunity, just flagging some of those challenges as we, you know, prospectively look at these funding opportunities. Of course, the competitive money is not guaranteed, right? So in some cases, there's a state match requirement that we're aware of, and for a lot of the competitive funding that's yet to be seen, right? We have to see those parameters set. And of course, entities have to have the capacity to apply at all, right? So, you know, when we're talking about these categories of funding, sometimes the state, right, is the applicant, but often it could be a private business, a utility, small utility, large utility, local unit of government, big and small, right? So, you know, just keeping that in mind as we think about their capacity, and we'll go into more details on that in the next set of slides. And then, of course, our pace will be dictated by the rollout of this. I'm sure folks have heard from the Department of Energy, believe their number is around 60 new programs in that department alone, you know, 16 new demonstration programs, 32 deployment programs, expanding funding, right? They're standing up a whole energy corps, made an announcement several weeks ago on that. So they're in their own hiring, right, in order to then have the necessary capacity themselves to turn around and give some of those, you know, some of that information we need in order to plan. But happy to report we have build.gov. It's just that build.gov, which is your portal to a comprehensive guidebook that the White House published recently. So that's across all issues areas, including energy within the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. And that's a really helpful public document, right, that kind of gives sort of by program or funding opportunity, right? Here's who can apply. Here's at a very high level what the funding opportunity is. And in some cases, they've given us a bit more on timeline of that opportunity. So again, we're still at the very early stages of this. It will take months, I am sure, to learn what we need to know, but that's a great resource for us all to look at. Next slide, please. Great, so the next set of the remainder of slides really I have will go into the major buckets of funding that we have. I'd say across all of those areas, the high level takeaways are most of it is competitive, right? So it's a real flip from the 2009 era dollars, right? If folks remember that, instead of formula funding predominantly flowing to the state, it's really mostly competitive. As we've mentioned before, some will have matching dollar requirements. And then for the last bullet, there's only one exception to that. There's one new existing, or rather one new formula funding program, but the limited amount of funding that's going through formula, right, is, you know, sort of an expansion of existing programs, which have their own already existing program specifications and requirements. And we'll get into that in the next slide, please. All right, so I think the next three slides are trying to give you sort of that worldview, that high-level view of what are the major sort of energy-related investments that we might see and realize benefit from. So grid resilience and reliability is a big one, and I'm excited to talk to this group of people about that because there's a lot in the bill, in the act regarding this. So you'll see there sort of two high-level summaries quickly on energy security. Our state energy program under Director Grancy already conducts, obviously, energy security planning. And I would say we're getting a small amount of money over a period of years that adds to that planning efforts. It will help us strengthen electric transmission and distribution planning efforts and really get the necessary engagement and data underway. So that's under energy security. So then moving over to grid resilience, a couple sort of initiatives to highlight. One is really about preventing outages and increasing reliability. It's called the Grid Resilience and Reliability Program. It's $5 billion total across the country, and there will be a 15% state match requirement. It's, again, a formula funding program. We do not yet know how the U.S. Department of Energy will determine the formula or to whom it will go to at the state level, so that's why you see that TBD amount. But we can immediately say, of course, this is an opportunity as we talk about preventing outages and increasing reliability. It's an opportunity for partnership with utilities, right? Other stakeholders that we can work with if and when, you know, we know from the Department of Energy sort of the details of that. But it's essentially to help supplement existing efforts to harden that grid, right, and to reduce the risk of power lines, you know, reduce the risk of wildfires to harm power lines, and sort of overall to try to reduce the likelihood or the consequences of disruptive events. So certainly work to be done there. And then, you know, again, there's a multiple programs under grid. So there's a big competitive program called the Program to Upgrade Our Electric Grid and Ensure Reliability and Resiliency. That's a competitive funding program. Tribes, local units of government, states, I think a few others are eligible entities. So that is an opportunity to coordinate and collaborate to demonstrate innovative approaches to transmission and storage and sort of demonstrating resilience and regionally as well. So it's sort of another slice at the same goal, right? This is an opportunity to invest in our grid, make it more resilient, and, you know, ensure reliability. And then overall, I just note again for this committee and your longstanding interest in this issue. So Department of Energy has actually launched something they're calling the Building a Better Grid Initiative. And that encompasses even more programs or planning efforts, I should say, not just programs, that really they're in the position, Department of Energy is in the position to run, right? So their plan, they, you know, they just launched this Better Build Initiative, I want to say 2 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago. So they're forecasting that they're going to be working with states and utilities and communities and industry stakeholders to really identify, like, what are our national transmission needs? Like, where are those high importance and high need transmission lines, right? That's critical to create jobs and make our power grid more resilient. So that's really exciting. And they also, I should say, have some set asides for small utilities as we think about that really reaching the remote areas. Next slide, please. Okay, great. I've only got two more slides, but this is another meaty one, right? The column on your left, lower energy costs for businesses, homeowners, and renters, wanted to highlight there's a few ways that's going to happen. All of those bullets in that first column is formula funding, right? And again, we don't have the exact numbers from the federal government. We have estimates, energy assistance. Again, that's a existing program, obviously. We're anticipating around $15 million over 5 years. So that's a small amount relative to the annual appropriation we get, but it's very important to serve more people. Energy assistance is critical, obviously, at this time of year, and we've been really working to get the word out. We have, I believe, 95% more new applicants to that program at this point this year, which is exciting and an important milestone. And then you'll see the other programs. I'll call out the revolving loan fund, right? That's a new initiative. It's you know, maybe 2 million. Again, we're not sure, but that would be targeting commercial and residential audits, energy audits, right? And energy upgrades. So that will be nice to see. And then over to the right-hand column, a number of supports, I would call them, right? Some of them will go directly to cities. Others, again, will may flow through us at Commerce, but really straight to small cities and schools, right? And that will be to support those eligible entities to reduce their energy usage, right? And get access to renewable energy. So those will be a few sort of small dollar programs, but very beneficial for the local level. Next slide, please. And this is my last slide, and I'm looking forward to discussion. This category of, you know, training workers for in-demand jobs, growing businesses and technology, I mean, these, we can make these bullets a lot longer and the font a lot smaller, and that just speaks to sort of the breadth of initiatives underway. These are, what we know about all of these opportunities is quite preliminary, and they are all competitive. So again, we're gonna need to wait to hear necessary details from the federal government on that, and then, you know, sort of proceed forward from there. But a few to highlight, you know, the growing businesses and technology, there's a number of sort of demonstration programs, whether it's for carbon capture or very large scale programs for a hydrogen hub or helping support manufacturers themselves, right? Like make their processes more efficient, right? They're spending less money on energy and they're hopefully, you know, continually improving their own bottom line, right? So a number of initiatives for that. And then I'll just, again, you know, want to acknowledge sort of the nexus, if you will, between energy and other sectors of the economy, like transportation and water, right? So of course, there's some provisions under there that you can learn more about in bill.gov, whether it's the Clean School Bus Program or the Advanced Drinking Water Technology Fund. Next slide, please. So Chair, just going back up a level, just some main takeaways. This is really the largest long-term investment in our energy infrastructure in quite a while. And we're looking forward to the opportunity that's coming towards us. It's mainly competitive. And we know we'll need some matching funds in order to realize all of those dollars. And we're looking forward to hearing more from the Fed so that we can get to work and understand more about the opportunity. But what we're doing now as a department is getting ready, right? Starting to talk with key stakeholders, right? Identifying those opportunities and getting information out to folks across the state. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions. And my colleague would Michelle would as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blyvelt. And Ms. Granzi, I don't know, do you have any concluding comments before questions?
Thank you, Chair Senjum. The one thing I would just add in that I'm not sure might have gotten skipped over was just with the weatherization assistance program, that in addition to the energy assistance, weatherization assistance will also receive some critical dollars necessary to serve income eligible households in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Blyvelt, I just have a couple to start out. Do you know how many dollars in this act are dedicated to the energy sphere? They wouldn't all come to Minnesota, I understand that, but just what kind of a bill, and if you don't know, why we can get that later.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, for the question. So let me answer it in a particular way and then zoom out. So for formula funding, right, so we walk through a couple of areas where we know we anticipate formula funds. This is preliminary, right? I'm sure we'll revise this number, but around 200 million, right, will be coming into the state. That's over a period of years, right? Sort of 5 to 10 years, depending on the time frame. But so I can offer that number for that. For competitive funding, right? We've tried to do the math as well. I mean, you look at hydrogen hubs, Chair, and you know that's a $2 billion get, right? If you depending, right, on how they structure that program. So you quickly get into billions and billions of dollars of opportunity. And really to put a finer point on it, we're going to need more information from our department, U.S. Department of Energy. Director Granseed, would you add to that?
Okay. My understanding was hydrogen alone, the hydrogen hubs was $9.5 billion with a B. Four hubs located across the country, probably not well defined yet, but so my next question is just based on what we know today and the legislative calendar, will there be a lot going on with respect to this act that this particular legislative session might be dealing with or interested in? Or is it delayed far enough out so that nothing's going to happen this year and it's for another year? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Chair, for the question. So, you know, we're looking forward to continuing to partner on how to maximize funds and maximize effectiveness. I think we all are sitting here with the fact we really, you know, will depend on the federal government in terms of actual timing about necessary details. So I'd suggest the path forward, right, is continued conversation. Formula funding, we have a bit more specificity about, but those are actually obviously programs that are prescribed already. I don't know if John Kelly would like to weigh in from our team as well.
Hello, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I think that, you know, while we're waiting on more concrete timing guidance from the feds and from DOE, we have a change item in the governor's budget for what we're for commerce, what we're calling a state competitiveness fund. It's $20 million. It would allow us to be flexible with the matching funds, not only as the state tries to be competitive, but for local units of government and tribal governments, as well as funding some staffing to get out there and do the competitive grants and also provide that technical expertise to local units of government. This is an estimate. I think you're spot on in that this is going to be a developing thing, but we believe that having that initial batch of matching funds that we'd be able to put up for these energy pieces and be competitive as a state and allow our communities to be competitive is one way forward. And that's what we put forward in the governor's budget. But obviously, it's a lot of conversations that need to happen. And there's going to be more and more clarity in terms of the percentages of what's needed and in terms of state matching funds. That's one idea, at least that's what's in the governor's budget for commerce to try to meet this need in this unclear time.
Okay, thank you so much. Senator Frantz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thanks, Ms. Blauvelt, Ms. Grancy, Mr. Kelly. My main concern here is the communities in Minnesota that aren't set up for grant applications, the smaller towns, in my opinion. So I guess, I better unmute here. Says unmute myself.
Put your microphone on.
Ignore that.
Microphone. I'm ignoring it. Welcome to the 2022 session. What I was trying to say, Mr. Chair, is that we want to put Minnesota communities in the best position to apply for these competitive grants. Mr. Kelly, I appreciate the $20 million, but I think we're equally interested in knowing what kind of support we can provide to these entities that are going to be competing for these grants, right? We want Minnesota to have the best shot to get these federal grants, and I think that's not just a question of funding, but a question of helping entities, including small towns, that don't have the capacity to write some of these grants. So my question, Ms. Blauvelt, is how are we going to do that? How are we going to, in addition to the $20 million, I get that proposal, how are we going to help these places be more competitive when the time comes, which I'm guessing is more in the fall and winter when we're not in session? What are we going to do this session to make that possible? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Leibold or any of the other commerce representatives?
Thank you, Chair. I think we'll probably answer as a team since there are a number of pots of money we're thinking about, but we're absolutely on the same page. And part of that governor's budget request allows us to have capacity to provide technical assistance, right? And certainly targeting those communities that are short. I was just talking to some smaller utilities today, right? And the need, right? There isn't, everyone's working a full-time job right now, right? And so we'll need that extra support. Director Grancy, can you elaborate?
Thank you, Chair.
Ms.
Grancy. I think the addition I would just play in there is that with that competitiveness fund and with our current staffing, we plan to do as much as we can for those smaller communities, tribal nations, and disadvantaged communities within the metro as well. You are absolutely right. There is so much complexity with federal grant applications that it's important to provide as much support as possible. We currently provide some of that through our technical assistance, but it's limited, you know, just due to capacity constraints. But for instance, we just supported a significant project down at Winona State, right? Supporting our local colleges is important as well. So we do look forward to being able to work together on providing that technical assistance.
Thank you, Ms. Branzi. Okay, nobody else from Commerce. Senator Utke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of this has come out with the last couple questions, but I was going to get into, as we're listening to all this, is there guidance, and maybe it's early yet, guidance coming from the federal government, and then once it gets here, you know, with the projects, who decides, and, you know, how is that determined? And I'm catching a little bit, a lot of this will be grants to our local areas, but is the state going to undertake some of these too, where we would need funding and et cetera? We would be bringing forth legislation to participate. I mean, all of the above participate in this?
Ms. Blauvelt or any other representative of Commerce?
Thoughts? Thank you, Chair. So thank you for the question, Senator. So a number of the opportunities, there's more than one eligible entity, right? So you see local units of government or tribes or states, right? So I wanted to give you a precise answer, right? It would depend on the opportunity, right? And sort of that program. So I think what I'm hearing in your question is the need for, you know, those folks that could be eligible to be aware of it, right? And then to be in a position, obviously, to take advantage of that opportunity. So certainly recognize that.
Senator Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One is, where does the governor's office or the executive branch have the authority to come up with a fixed amount of money that they could use for technical assistance writing? In other words, does he have some fund there that he can use, or is this something that we should legislate for to make sure that we've got the funds available at the time we need them? That's one question. The other is, and it goes to you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee, is should we be setting priorities in each of these categories and working with the House so that we have a list of priorities in the event that we're not able to do anything this calendar year, but have to move into the next calendar year? Thank you.
Ms. Blauvelt, you want to go first and I'll try second.
Thank you, Chair. I'd actually defer to John Kelly on this one.
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair, Senator Newton. To the first question, again, that is why we, maybe even back to Senator Rutke's question as well, the reason why we have the change item for the Competitiveness Fund is that the legislature would authorize a pool of matching funds along with, in that change item is built into for the authorization for the department to hire the technical staff. And then separately to the question of where the state legislature would need to take an active role, at least, you know, with these grants, is the matching funds piece. An example of, you know, I think I don't want to presuppose what Senator Utke is talking about, but I believe in the jobs bill in the previous session, there was a directive for the state to apply for the capital projects fund for funding for $70 million for the border-to-border broadband program. I don't, you know, that was a distinct program. I think with at least how this funding is set up through DOE, through the bipartisan infrastructure law, is that each of these different grant programs is different. Each have a different percentage potentially in terms of what match is required. And so I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation. And I think that, yes, I think just like the previous federal bills that came our way, the timing may not may not exactly line up with the legislative calendar, but that is why we put forward the idea of this competitiveness fund. I think the idea with the competitiveness fund is that it would allow us to kind of bridge that gap between potentially May and when the legislature is able to return and we have clearer understandings in terms of the pace of the rollout, the timeline. Maybe projects like the hydrogen hub have taken a bit more of a shape, and there can be more concrete asks. So that's where we are at on that. I think secondly, to Senator Newton's question, I don't think the department would necessarily want to weigh in on the legislature's prerogative to set targeted areas of wanting to go for things. I think that at this time, we are getting a lot of interest from energy stakeholders, from utilities and other organizations where these grants align with them about what we know. And we're right now trying to be in very much an information sharing mode. And I think that these orgs are also looking at what makes sense for them, whether it's utilities or energy efficiency providers or any of those types of organizations. So I hope that answers the question a little bit.
So Senator Newton, I'll just answer that. I think there's probably some value to huddling up with the House on what some of the priorities legislatively we might think about pursuing, and whether we pursue them legislatively or through the agency, that would have to be decided. But I do know there's, for instance, the hydrogen hub, there's conversations outside of state government involving universities, utilities, private businesses, University of North Dakota, for instance, North Dakota State University, which has a hydrogen study facility up there. They're big into this, and so there's conversations about a multi-state approach to seeking some of this funding for hydrogen development within the upper Midwest. Again, whether that goes anywhere or not, I don't know. So we'll have to see that.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if I was heard or not. I have a little pop-up that said I needed to unmute, so I don't know. I do have a question, though, with respect to certainly the formula money will come to the agency, I suspect, and then we'll appropriate it, through legislation at some point in time. The other money, though, would again, that's competitive. Does the agency itself intend, at least at this point, to pursue any of that competitive money? I'm thinking about the partnership between the legislature and the administration on some of these things. Or do you intend to pursue anything, Ms. Blauvelt or Mr. Kelly or Ms. Granzi on just behalf of the agency, take any personal, any agency initiatives on this?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, for the question, we'll do it. I'm probably a team answer approach again. Sure. Again, considering the breadth of the applications, and I just appreciate in the previous discussion, Chair, this is not just the state obviously applying for opportunities. Hydrogen Hub's a great example. That is going to be a private, other entities besides the state are eligible to apply and are doing and are in conversation about it, right? So really, when you go up a level, the opportunity is for, utilities, small cities, large cities, tribes, states, business owners, right? It's really quite considerable. But to directly answer your question, some of the competitive funding opportunities, the information is so preliminary, it's hard to scope out, right, that opportunity to the level of who's the best position to apply. But certainly, for example, the energy auditors training, right, the training for building code implementation, those seem you know, states are eligible, right? And those seem in line with something that we'd want to look further at as more information comes out. And I direct, if it's possible, Chair, for Director Granzi or John Kelly to continue the answer.
To either of you, if you have any further comments.
Thank you, Chair Senjum. There are, within the Infrastructure Act, the breakdown of the different types of funding is a bit convoluted at times, but there are some areas that only states are eligible to apply, others that other entities are. So for instance, Assistant Commissioner Blauvelt mentioned the energy auditor training is a program that only state energy offices can apply for. So we would absolutely be interested, recognizing the workforce development opportunity there, in applying for that funding. In other cases, we would anticipate being a partner, you know, supporting universities, businesses, other entities, utilities that are eligible to apply.
Okay. Senator Friend.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the discussion. I think we want to be competitive. I just want to point out, you know, the taxpayers of Minnesota send more money to Washington, D.C. than we get back out. That's just a fact. And if we're going to have federal tax dollars forming these competitive grants, I think it's on us to make sure that we at least put Minnesota in the best position to compete. We don't know exactly what they're going to be for. We don't know exactly how much it takes to match. We don't know what the best ideas are going to be. But we can see that many of these are going to be in the fall and winter after we've adjourned. And I'm just urging the committee to keep in mind, let's do everything we can to put these entities, utilities, cities, small and large, into the best possible position to compete. Because I really believe Minnesota is going to be a winner when we start competing for these grants. And I think we'll be proud of that work. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Friend. Ms. Blauvelt, or anyone else from Commerce. So I'm reading from one of your slides. It just talked about one-time funding to enhance grid reliability and resilience. That, and we do have some utility people in the audience today. I suspect that would be more certainly, obviously, in their arena than our own. Would that be the case for something like that?
Thank you, Chair. You're correct in that. So, again, a number of programs enhancing grid resilience, reliability. Utilities are direct recipients of grants from they're contemplated as direct recipients of grants for that by the Department of Energy. Details, of course, to be determined. And I just want to be clear that there's a 30% set aside for small utilities, right, under one of those programs. So that's important to know. And then if the state would apply, it would be to create a plan in partnership with utilities, right, transmission operators and the like. So it's a great call out that particular area would be a collaboration or a place where utilities are in the lead.
Okay. Any other questions from any members here or online? Senator Eric, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess as part of the conversation with all these funds being made available, and we've seen in a number of other areas, like in HHS especially, a number of cases of fraud, is that something else that we're preparing for here as we see these funds come in, how we're going to monitor that and make sure all claims are and plans are going to be appropriate uses of the money and prevent any fraud?
Thank you to anyone who wants to answer that one.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, yes. Senator, for the question. And it's an important one. And Director Grancy and I have direct experience monitoring for fraud and waste. And it's one of the reasons why you see the rollout at the pace that it's at, right? Because those protocols do need to be put in place, along with obviously the other details of the application. So we are well prepared to, you know, if and when Commerce has provided those funds to monitor for that and prevent. Director Grancy can elaborate.
Anyone else? I have one final one, perhaps, unless somebody else has one that they want to bring forward. But So at least leaving this room today, our thought might be at least that the administration is going to come forward with a $20 million proposal for this year's supplemental budget to be available to fund as matching funds to fund any initiative that might accrue at least this year, or perhaps even going into next year, I guess. Is that generally correct?
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct. We envision that pool being available for matching funds, not only for the state, but for government entities, as well as the goal is to also add staff to provide that technical and grant writing assistance to the government, both for the state and for local units of government. I don't think this is the only state match component of any of this. This is just one idea, and that's the one that we're putting forward so that we are able to be competitive quickly as we need to, as there is a national competition for most of these DOE grant funds.
So maybe just follow up. So I'll just pick one of my cities. If Dodge Center had a proposal, would they ask for which required matching money? Would they ask then for a grant from Department of Commerce, or would we legislate that as part of the $20 million, or would it just be a grant available, and they would either get it or not get it, and you would decide? We know that, or is that we're getting too far into the weeds?
Chair Sunjum, I do think that there's opportunity for us to work collaboratively in developing how that $20 million competitiveness fund would roll out. And I think the key elements is really, one, to make it equitable, to communicate to all potential recipients within Minnesota, and then also to allow for flexibility in order to be responsive to those competitive grant requests. So yes, more details to follow, but that is something that we are considering, assuming that that legislation would move forward.
Okay. Does any member have any other questions? Anybody from the audience want to speak to any of this, or? It's not okay. With that, then we'll conclude this meeting. We'll next meet next Tuesday. I believe it's the 15th, and the agenda will be decided interimly, and we'll look forward to that. So, with that, the committee is adjourned.